Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to The Angel Connection, a weekly show about all things angelic with your host, international healer and author, C.J. Martas.
Good evening, my angel friends. This is C.J. Martas and you're listening to The Angel Connection on Friday, November 9th. I have a wonderful show for you this evening. My special guest, Jerome Braggs, joins me to share his incredible story. I've had an opportunity to hear all about it, of having to heal himself from some pretty significant health issues, as you'll learn a little bit later in the show. But he had to heal himself physically by going deep within. So I'm delighted to have him here to intimately share that story with all of you. I know I have a lot of my listeners who are dealing with chronic health issues, so I try to bring some of these special guests to help you on your journey as well. We'll take callers with topic-based questions or comments, so feel free to call in at 1-877-296-0345. Well, I have a single prayer request here for this week. Please offer your prayers and intentions for Jeanette's brother who's trying to turn his life around. We ask that he be able to acquire that strength to make those positive changes that we need to. So let's see him empowered, guys, and send that thought out into the universe this evening for him. Well, you know, I love to share little inspiring stories. They are inspiring to me because people, as you know, with this show being about our connection to angels, I love the segment because people are acting like angels or in it. End up being in the right place at the right time to be the angels that we need. Well, this story comes out of Cleveland. Timothy Rose says he never expected to help save a life on this particular Tuesday morning, but that's exactly what happened. He was driving, and he had just dropped his wife off of work about 9:15 in the morning. He was driving back home on the highway when he saw that a semi-truck had overturned and was halfway off the highway. The driver himself had been thrown from the front cab and was lying injured on the embankment. As somebody's interviewing Tim, he just starts choking up just how lucky it was that he was there and that he was able to help. Tim said he'd never seen such an awful accident, but, you know, he must be a good Boy Scout because he said he was always prepared with blankets, towels, and first aid kit in the trunk of his car. And Tim said there was a mysterious woman that sort of appeared, which made me think about maybe an angel in disguise, too, at the accident. She never introduced herself, never said a word about who she was, but she helped take care of the injured man while Tim was trying to direct traffic and so forth to make sure nobody else got hurt. He said she was a godsend and was a little angel herself. When the police came, they thanked both him and this woman who quickly disappeared after they were acknowledged. Tim says, well, you know, it can be scary, even dangerous, to help someone in need, but he encourages everyone to put themselves in that same situation. And this is his quote, which is why I selected it for this week, guys. We are all human beings, and it's great to stop and help a fellow human being, especially in a time of need or crisis. The article goes on to say that this is the second time Tim has helped save a life. Several years before, he helped save a boy from drowning in Lake Erie. Tim says, well, you know, he's not a hero. He's just blessed to have been at the right place at the right time. So kudos to Tim and people like Tim who inspire us to really go above and beyond for our fellow man. So many blessings to him. Well, I know that everyone is always anxiously awaiting the angel message of the week. So here we go. This is the Seraphim message for November 9th. Dear ones, you may find that your participation in the external world will flow better for you this week, especially if you've been experiencing the physical shifts that have really dominated the healing processes of so many people lately. You should take care, though, not to overdo it, even if you feel much better this week to engage other people and be involved. Continue to make a positive choice each day to vibrate to joy and gratitude so that you can receive more abundantly as new opportunities will open for you. Even if it isn't apparent, you should know that you are making great progress to release your limitations. Remember, the more you endeavor to heal yourself, the more you will be receptive to the universal flow of divine energy supporting whatever your personal goals may be. The core lesson this week will be about identifying and releasing self-judgment. It can be easier to see when you snap to judgment about the actions of others. You may feel guilt right after you think or say something negative about someone. Self-judgment, self-punishment, and other ways that you can harm yourself can easily spill into your external world. If you struggle with this, it's important to use this as a way to understand that you are also quite critical of yourself, and or you would not be so quick to judge others. If you find yourself very accepting of others now at this place in your life, and not so quick to judge others, this is a very good thing that you have accomplished. If this is true for you, it is now time to look for the subtle and more elusive ways that you may judge or be too critical of yourself. So how do you look at your own actions in a particular day? Do you find yourself thinking often of what you, quote, didn't get done? Are you constantly stressed at the end of the day, knowing that you are headed into the next day feeling like you're already at a disadvantage? We ask you to try not to look upon your daily experiences as a checklist of, quote, to-dos, because this sets you up for a feeling that you have failed in some way when those boxes don't get checked off. Rather, try to look at the day as a list or set of experiences that you can choose to alter and change at any time as your day unfolds. We understand in the human world it is necessary to make some plans and be organized when there's so much to get done. But changing your mind about the dire importance of them is crucial at this time. It's a new mindset about the activities of your day that we ask you to fully consider this week. Making your plans more flexible in your mind can allow you so much more to unfold each day in an organic way. These organic experiences can definitely fill you up rather than tear you down. If you allow for more spontaneity in the personal areas of your life, this can help you to release a subtle type of self-judgment that can block your ability to see the authentic you. So this week, please be mindful of when you chastise yourself for, quote, not doing something, or, quote, doing something different than what you had originally planned. The energies this week will help to illuminate the self-destructive tendency so that you can release and overcome it. You may find that other people around you are mired in their own self-judgment this week. So encourage them to relax and release this way of thinking. Through your helping them, it will allow you to recognize when you're doing the same thing yourself. This will be a wonderful week if you embrace who you are and realize that you can be free to enjoy your life and not be ruled by it. Know that whenever you need the support of an angel, we are always here to help you on your journey. Even if you do not call to us directly, just know that we have always been there, celebrating your divine gifts and supporting the treasure in the world that you are. Until next time, dear ones, we are the Seraphim. Well, I was profoundly affected, actually, by the angel message this week. How often do we have that critical to-do list? So I think it's nice that we're encouraged to not judge ourselves when we can't check those little boxes off like we like to do, right? We like to be organized. I know I used to be like hyper-organized kind of person. So, well, you know, I want to introduce my guest here. In 2004, Jerome Braggs was checked into a hospital in Washington, D.C., and diagnosed with kidney failure, pneumonia, severe anemia, pancreatitis, fluid-packed lungs, and a parasite in his stomach. He was then told he was going to die within the next week. It was then that Jerome came face to face with the three questions that everyone asks themselves in one form or another when they are dying. Did I live enough? Did I love enough? Did my life matter? At that time, Jerome's answers to all three questions were no. Doctors offered no hope or consolation for him, yet Jerome not only survived to share this story with us this evening, but he also learned to thrive by going deep within his own mind, and you hear me talk a lot about the power of our mind, and listening to the message of his spirits. In speaking with him, I also found out that he healed himself not once, but twice. Are you intrigued? I am. So we're going to get to hear this real story from a wonderful man. Today, Jerome Braggs is the CEO and founder of the Prosperous Life Academy, LLC, a global coaching practice dedicated to teaching entrepreneurs, coaches, speakers, dedicated individuals, and service providers how to align themselves with universal laws and principles so that they can achieve quantum leaps in creating a happy and fulfilling life. Without further ado, Jerome, I want to graciously welcome you to the Angel Connection. Hello, Jerome.
Hey, CJ. Thank you so much for having me here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just great.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much for that lovely intro. Thank you.
Well, you know, we've had a chance to talk about your the incredible journey that you have. And now that we're an hour, it's wonderful because we can really get in depth this evening about what you experienced and kind of learned along. And so since, other than my intro, you know, let's talk a little bit about just a brief thing, you know, about what were you doing in your life prior to this first health crisis? You know, what can you paint a picture for the listeners?
Yeah, you know, the what you just read about happened on January 1st, 2004, so I was actually on New Year's Day. And the year before that, I had just moved to Washington, D.C. from Atlanta, Georgia. I had just graduated from college, and I was I had moved to D.C. I was working as a counselor and case manager for men with HIV and AIDS at a nonprofit organization. And I was really excited about this nonprofit because they had kind of a holistic approach to their treatment. You know, they were offering not just the traditional services, you know, like HIV prevention, HIV care, et cetera, but they were offering people like massage. They had a psychotherapy segment where they got the people that came and got counseling. They also had an herbalist available that people could talk to. And I was there also bringing in some of the things that I knew, like meditation, like working with the mind to heal, things like that. So I was really excited about that work, but it wasn't what I really wanted to do. At that time in my life, I really, what I thought my whole purpose in life was to be was a famous singer. So I was working this job because I got off work early, and it was like government aligned. So I was off on all the holidays and things like that, and I thought this would be my kind of catapult to being able to get out there in the world as a singer. I could sing in the nightclubs and all of that, but found myself actually not doing any of that. You know, left with the very intention to do that, and was just working. And not only was I just working, but a lot of the things I had. My intention for being there was, you know, to teach this meditation, to talk about the things that I knew, because I had been studying the mind-body-spirit connection before. I was a mentee of Dr. Michael Beckwith at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, this was before The Secret and all of that. And so I was really excited about this whole mind-body-spirit thing as it pertained to healing. And so I was really trying to put this in the work, but they had cut a lot of that out. In the beginning, when I got there, they were very excited about it, but then they started to kind of cut it back and just have me focused on the traditional approach. So I was not really in a place where I was very happy, although I was excellent. You know, I'm an actor as well, and so I'm excellent at putting on a face for the public, and I definitely had a mask. I had a mask on. I wasn't happy. I felt unfulfilled, and I felt like I was failing. I was failing my dreams. And I definitely, and another part of that, too, was I was probably about 40 or 50 pounds heavier than I am today. And although I was a very attractive man, I didn't realize it. So that was my life, you know, this person beating up on himself for how he thought he looked, and also feeling a failure, not being fulfilled, but having an awesome performance in the public eye, awesome performance where people thought everything was great.
Wow. So we can all relate to that, Jerome, you know, having these periods of our life truly where we end up in a place maybe we didn't plan on. Like you said, this is kind of what you had in your mind was going to happen, not exactly the way it turned out. So
yeah.
Then, as you mentioned, then I didn't know it was New Year's Day until just now when you said that, you end up in the hospital with a number of health problems. Can you share how sick you were, what the doctors told you?
Yeah, so 2 weeks before New Year's Day, I was kind of, I had flu-like symptoms. You know, I had kind of a fever, weakness in the body, and that was about kind of it. You know, I was very weak and kind of hot. So I was at home, and I was, you know, making myself some soup, and I was doing the types of things that I knew to kind of heal myself kind of quickly. You know, I was not eating meat. I was drinking a lot of water, doing teas, meditating, doing the kind of things I had that had worked before when I had a cold or a fever or something like that. And nothing was working. So I had been off of work for about 2 weeks. I was lucky because the last week of the year, my company, that organization, was off of work anyway. So but New Year's Eve really got my attention because I was a big New Year's Eve type of person at that time. I was into partying. I was into, you know, going out there having a good time, and I wasn't feeling well enough to do that. So I called my mother, who's a doctor, and she was living in Oklahoma at the time. And I asked her, you know, to call me a medication in. Can you call me in something so I can take it so I can feel better? Because I wasn't taking anything. I hadn't been seen by a doctor or anything. And, you know, she asked me what my symptoms were. And she kind of really urged me to go to the emergency room because I had this for a while and it didn't seem to be getting better or easing up at all. So go to the emergency room. They can check you out. They can give you something and you can be back to work, you know, after the new year. So I said, okay, great. You know, by that night, I was kind of in a little bit of pain. It had progressed a little bit worse to where I was in some pain. And so I called my friends, who, of course, came to get me after they had done their New Year's Eve celebration.
Oh, boy.
You know, it was New Year's Eve. So they came and got me and took me to the hospital. And, you know, when I first got there and they called me back into the room, there was a doctor who was working with me, one doctor, and the doctor went to take my blood and check, you know, some of the things that was happening with me. And after the doctor came back with my test, there was a team of doctors with the original doctor. And they did something very strange. They handed me the telephone, and they said I had a call to the hospital. And so I was like, okay. So I took the phone, and it was my mom, and she was crying. And she said, I'll be there in the morning, and she hung up the phone. And I knew then that it was a little bit more than the flu because my mom, of course, was always my rock around, you know, illness. You know, she would always say, just take this or go to sleep and everything will be okay.
Right.
So I kind of had a shock already that my mom had called the hospital to check on me and that she was crying. So I was kind of in a space of shock already. And the doctors then began to circle the room and they began to tell me, you know, hey, this is a little more serious than we thought initially. You have severe case of kidney failure, anemia, pancreatitis, pneumonia. There's about 20 pounds of overload of fluid on your body. You have a fluid-packed lung. You have a parasite in your stomach, and the parasite was Giardia.
Ooh.
And they were diagnosing me with AIDS. And not just, you know, the normal person with the normal person's T cell count is over 1,000. My T cell count, when they told me this, was 2. And they looked at me with kind of a hopeless look. With, you know, they were just telling me, "You have about 7 days to live. We think you about have 7 days, and you kind of need to get your affairs in order. We're going to try to do what we can, but we don't think." Your situation is at a point where we don't think we'll be able to do much. So they left me in that room and in the darkness that only a hospital room can give once you found out you only have a few days to live. And I had some very serious questions, you know, to kind of ask myself. You know, I came face to face with those questions that you said. You know, I was asking myself, okay, I had a very different perspective on death. As I said, I was already on my spiritual path. My spiritual path had already begun. And so I wasn't afraid of death at that point. I had a different perspective of it. But I wanted to know if I was really ready to go. So I asked myself, you know, had I really lived enough? Had I lived my dreams? Had I done what I wanted to do here on the planet? And the answer was no. It was absolutely no. You know, I felt like, again, I was feeling like I was a failure. I didn't feel like I was really living the dreams that I had for myself at the time or that I was even pursuing them. Had I loved enough? Like, did I really have fulfilling relationships? Was I expressing the love in my heart? And was I getting that love back in return? Like, was I allowing that to happen in return? And no, I wasn't. You know, I definitely didn't know how to fully love somebody because I didn't know how to love myself. You know, I there were some things I felt ashamed of. There were definitely things that I didn't know about loving myself unconditionally. I didn't know how to do that. And then the last thing was that I really, you know, I was a strong believer in purpose. I was a strong believer that I was here on the planet for a reason and with reason. And I did not feel like I was involving myself in either one. And so I was with, there was a conundrum. You know, here I was saying no to all three of these questions that I was asking myself at that time. And here I was about 7 days to live, and there was nothing I could do about that. So I began to ask myself very seriously, was I ready to go? And my answer was no, because although I wasn't scared of death, I was horrified of dying like that. And I wanted to be able to say hell yes to those questions when I died and when my time came. I want to say hell yes. I lived all of my dreams, and I did everything that I could do. I loved to the full capacity of my heart, and I deposited who I came here to be into the world. And so I made a decision right there and then, in that room by myself, in the immense pain by that time, that I was going to live. Not only was I going to live, but I was going to heal. And that started the journey.
Wow. So most people, though, Jerome, really, and I'm sure the listeners would agree, you have this team of doctors coming in with their pity look is what I kind of envisioned. It's like, oh, sorry, dude, there's nothing that we can do for you. And so most people would be in that dark room crying, first of all. And so I can just, but you know, those experiences along the way, whether it's something like yours or some different types of peak experiences, really sounded like, hey, with those questions, you know, that you ask yourself. So you basically make that decision then, right there. So how did you turn this around then? So what kind of happens next for you then at that point?
Yeah, well, okay, so there's a little bit of foundation that I had that helped me not immediately go into the fear of it and the depression and the hopelessness of it. I had a history. My life had taught me early on. I grew up, you know, fundamental Christian in the Baptist church with my mother. And there was a saying that they used to have back then that God answers all prayers, either yes, no, or maybe. But my life as a young kid, I had come to this understanding, a silent understanding. I didn't really share it with people, but it was just through my experiences of living. I had come to this understanding that God at the time, was how I used to define it, never really said no. If you heard no, if you got a no, if you weren't getting what you wanted, it wasn't because God didn't want you to have it. It was because you weren't at a place where you really believed that you were going to get it. And my life had shown me that everything I believed that I wanted to get, I got. And so there were many times, and there was a time even before that I had had a surgery when I was young, running hurdles. I was a track star. And at one track meet, I was running hurdles and heard a big snap in my knee and was rushed to the hospital to find out that I had pulled a piece of my tibia through my growth plate and into my thigh. And the doctors told me that I would never run again and that I probably would never really have full usage of my leg. And I immediately shut that conversation off because I wanted to go to the Olympics at that time. So I was not having that. And sure enough, a year later, I was back on the track team. So I had this hot kind of foundation of everything was possible. I really believed that. And so immediately what I did was go into, okay, what do we need to do now to heal? So I was already a student of the law of attraction. I had been studying it a little bit. I had been using it, though, kind of to get, like, $5 to eat when I didn't have any money, you know, to get some Chinese food or, you know, I'm running late for the movies at the mall, so let me get a parking space in front of the mall or something like that. Very small things, but I made a decision that if it was going to be real, if the things I was reading and the things I said I believed, if I really believed them, I was going to have to put them into practice. So I literally threw the kitchen sink at this whole situation. I immediately made a vision of what I wanted my life to be. I began to read very inspirational books. I made my parents go out and buy these books that reminded me that I could do it, that everything was possible. I affirmed every day that I was well. I even got my nutritionist at my – by the way, I had to be on dialysis at first during this time. And so the nutritionist at my dialysis center, actually the social worker, had this picture of healthy kidneys. She had this kind of diagram, this 3D diagram of healthy kidneys, and I asked her for that. And she gave it to me, and I used that every night to look at, to visualize healthy kidneys in my body. I did the whole appreciation before I went to sleep every night. I told my parents three things I loved about them and I appreciated about them, and they both gave me something that they did in return, and we did that every night. And I really went deep into really aligning my thoughts with what was going to happen, and I protected my space. I did not allow anyone to have the conversation of, woe is me or woe is Jerome or this is not happening. Even my doctors, when I had this kind of deer in the headlight things I had mastered, when my doctors would come in and they would say, although it looks like this is getting better, we still believe, you know, you'll probably either have this for the rest of your life. Even if you make it out of this situation, you'll have these for the rest of your life and you'll have to deal with that. So as soon as they would start talking about something that was not in alignment with the vision that I was holding for myself, I had this deer in the headlights look where I would look at them and be like, But I was not there. Consciously, I was not anywhere in that conversation. I was in my head saying, okay, so what's the next step, Jerome? What do we need to do to get, what do we need to do to make our vision come true? So for the first month, literally, even my mother was at a point where she couldn't talk to me. You know, I had created this bubble of positivity where I didn't even allow her in my space to have what a traditional mother is going to have when she sees her only child dying. She couldn't have that in around me. She would have to literally go outside and have her and cry or anything. But when she was in with me, she had to say, we're going to make it, you're going to make it. And she had to participate in my process. So that was kind of the structure that I had the first time. And it took me a month to get out of the hospital. I was in the hospital for a month. And after that, it was two more months before I was fully recovered. Everybody was calling, the doctors were calling me a miracle. My kidneys were recovered, all of the other things that I had presented with, you know, the anemia, pneumonia, all that was healed. They couldn't find traces of HIV in my system, and everything was looking great. So that was the first time, and that was the process that I went through in the beginning.
Wow. And, you know, I was just thinking of your mother, too, being a doctor. I was raised by nurses. So everything,
yeah.
When you have, yeah. And for those listeners out there, when you have a medical person in your family, that is often to your detriment. And not because they're bad people or anything, but they tend to catastrophize because they're doctors. They've seen the worst of the worst, and they've seen a lot of people go downhill. And so every time I had a sniffle, I ran to the doctor. And so I very much relate to that. But what I find very amazing about what you shared so far is you just weren't having it, were you, from anybody? You were just holding on to that. I like the things that you were talking about, whether you were affirming yourself. I'm very visual, too, so I love that you just kept, you know, the 3D image of healthy kidneys. You know, and our brains are quite powerful. So having that singular, I guess what I would call a singular state of mind,
for
healing.
Yeah, you know, I knew that the mind, and I had a belief that the mind created all of your reality. Through the law of attraction, your reality was literally bent around your thoughts. and your feelings.
Yeah.
And so I knew that the most important thing for me was to keep my mind, keep my thoughts clean and keep them high, meaning they were, I had to feel good about what I was thinking, and it had to be in direct alignment with what I said I wanted. Now, that wasn't easy. You know, the hardest thing I've ever had to do in my entire life was to believe that I was going to be well when nobody else in my life did.
Nobody.
You know, I had a team of doctors, and my mother, even though she wanted to, at the core of her being, she wanted her son to live. She wanted her son to make it. But all of her training and all of her conditioning said nobody makes it out of this. And she was preparing for that. So, you know, and so I could not even, as much as I needed my mother, I needed someone when it was hard to just fall into and to hear that you're going to make it. She couldn't always be that because her consciousness didn't know how to do that. You know, this was a very shock to her system. And she'll tell you, you know, today, when she came into the hospital, I had started already. You know, as soon as she came and she was crying, she broke down when she first came to the hospital, and we hugged, and then I said, this is what I need to do, and I need you on board immediately. And so she never had a chance to even really go into that. But it was hard, you know, for a team of doctors. You know, I had an entire team of people constantly, consistently talking to me every day. My family was there. And neither one of them was at that space where they, you know, neither one of them really understood the law of attraction or the mind-body-spirit connection. All they understood was that somebody they deeply, deeply loved was on their deathbed. And they really, really wanted me to live, and they prayed from a space of their own understanding. But your conscious beliefs and the beliefs, the dominant beliefs that you hold is a very powerful thing. Your subconscious is very powerful. And so that was the dominating force with them, and I had to be very aware of that. And again, I had to create like this bubble. You know, when you came within 5 feet of me, you could not talk anything but health and healing. You absolutely couldn't, and if you did, you had to leave. And so that was what I created, but it was the hardest thing. You know, I would literally sometimes I would cry at night right before I went to sleep because of how hard that was, but I would only give myself that time to cry. I gave myself that time, and then when I woke up in the morning, it was back to business.
It takes a tremendous amount of courage to stand fast to, and I have agreed with everything you said. You know, our what we believe, and like you were describing, people praying for you from that space or that energy of still with those deeply rooted beliefs that you're on your deathbed. Mm-hmm. And we've had shows, you know, I've had shows about the power of, you know, the lost mode of prayer, you know, being a living prayer, you know, already seeing things healed. You know, all these things that you're describing are things, obviously, through the course of my own journey, I've definitely been introduced to all of those things, you know, to be that miracle. You know, you beat the odds because your body, I believe, underlying, you know, subconsciously already knows everything it needs to do to get rid of just anything. But you have to, as you said, you know, be in alignment with those things. So now we're going to blow the listener's mind because the next part of your story, to me, is really, I'm in awe of this and how you dealt with this because I have a lot of people, I do a lot of medical intuitive work. And when people, you know, create that vision of wellness and see it through and it happens, they're like, wow, I'm really empowered. But you, and when things recur, you know, that they're way back down because they feel like they failed. They feel like maybe they didn't do something right. I mean, it becomes kind of a very, as the angels were saying in the message, kind of a self-critical thing. So now let's talk about, though, you get all healed, I think you said, in several months. You're not on dialysis. You're back to health. And then 2 years later, share what happens.
Yeah, it was a year and a half later, just shy of a year and a half. Okay. Life was good for me. Life was good for me in that for about that first year. And then that end of that half, that next part of that 6 months, I started to feel bad again. And it was a year and a half later, I found myself back in that same hospital with the same team of doctors with the exact same diagnosis. I had every single symptom again. Every single reading, you know, as I was saying, like I had AIDS and the T cell count was 2. I had that exact thing again. And this time, instead of seven days, they gave me 48 hours. And there was a different set of questions that I asked myself, you know, when I was in this space, in a different feeling place that I was at. But the first questions that I asked was one, how did I get here? You know, how did I get to this place? And then the second question was, how do I really never get here again? What do I need to do? And so what was coming forth from within me, you know, I believe in silence. I believe that when you hear the voice of spirit, of the soul, of source, of your inner being, or however you identify with it, God, that's when you hear that voice. And so I became very silent and very still, and I asked that question. And the answer that came forth from within me was, to the first question, was that how did I get here? And I had gotten there because I had learned, like the quintessential college student learns, who, you know, crams for his big exam the night before just to pass the test. But the information that he learned really didn't make him a different person. He wasn't a new person because of the information that he learned. He just kind of got it just to pass. And I had passed the test, but I hadn't become a different person.
Oh.
Yeah, and so that was the answer to the next question, which was how do I never get here again? And the answer that came forth was I was going to have to become a new person. And the only way to become that new person was I was going to have to go deep within. You know, I was saying that the way out is the way in. The way in is the way out. And I was going to have to go in, very deeply in, and learn the real spiritual truths. The real spiritual principles that govern everything, the truth of who I really am and how I really create, and then look at some really deep things about who I was, who I was being, and how this person I was being is not the person that I was here to be. And so I made a commitment then that I was going to do that, that I was going to learn thoroughly. I was going to be transformed through the process of learning thoroughly. And that I was going to become a totally different person. I was not going to look back. And I knew definitely in that space that I had learned how to survive, but I hadn't learned how to really live. And so I was going to make a commitment to learn how to really live. And that journey, and I know you're going to ask me about some of that, but that journey took me 7 years. It took me 7 years. To really fully become a new person. I don't think it had to take me 7 years, but we'll talk about that.
Right.
But it did. You know, there were some things that I was in my own way a lot of that time. But it took me 7 years. I was on dialysis for 7 years, and then I recovered again. And this time I knew the principles, the spiritual principles, the applications of spiritual principles and truths and universal laws that really make miracles happen. Mm-hmm. And I knew that I was a different person. I was a whole different person now. And so that was what happened in a nutshell. You know, that was the process.
Okay. Well, let's back up just a little bit, because I can imagine you're facing the same team of doctors. You know, was your mother a little more on board, of course, probably this time for you? Or did she think that...
No, she was not. Not this
really?
Time she was, yeah, this time she was more into... She was very centered in doctor mode. And you just need to do what you can to live. And it wasn't more... And it was more doctor mode this time. And my mother was just an outpicturing of my own consciousness. Like, let me make that very clear.
Right.
The people in our lives and the experiences and the relationships we have at any given point are a direct mirror of where we are in our consciousness at the moment. So because at this moment, I was also feeling very ashamed. I was feeling like a failure. And this time, instead of, you know, the empowerment and the courage that I had the first time, I had hopelessness and fear. And so I was afraid. And I was afraid that what if I wasn't going to, I didn't fear that I was going to die because I knew enough then that I was going to live. I was in control of that portion of it. But I really believed that I was going to be on dialysis for the rest of my life. I didn't know if this was going to work out or not. And I was very ashamed. You know, here I was, this picture of miracle, you know, for other people, I was a picture of a miracle.
Right.
And I was back in this space. And I also knew that, again, reality is created. You have to take 100% responsibility for what's happening. It may not be your fault, but it is your responsibility and your ability to respond. And so I was also blaming myself here. I was not really in the point of, you know, I just said that it may not be your fault, but I was not in that conscious space at that time. I was blaming myself for where I was.
Right.
So,
well, and something that you said, too, that I did want to kind of key in for listeners was something I heard you say, you know, the first time around. It's kind of like, you know, there's lots of tools, right, and we can master those tools. But what you're kind of talking about is we kind of have to, everything has to align with that new person, as you described, right? And so there's a lot of stuff out there, you know, the secret, and, you know, all of these things. Yes, those are very true things. But if we have buried our emotions in, you know, from childhood, if we have not dealt with certain things, then it can be fleeting, like you experienced. And so you really had to get pushed that second time into those emotions and things, too.
Yeah, you know, CJ, you said something very important, which is a chapter in my upcoming book, because this was exactly what I came to realize, the second part of this. I believe that both situations and experiences were bringing me situations, not lessons, if you will, reminders, if you will, of something to know. And the first time, what I really came to fully understand my first healing journey was that you literally can create anything that you want. There's nothing impossible. That you can literally create it, you can attract it, you can manifest it, however, whatever language, you know, sits in the seat of your soul, that you can literally do that. That was what I needed to know then. The second time, what the overall journey was about, what that experience taught me deeply, was that you can attract anything to you, but you cannot keep it if you do not feel worthy of it. And that was the process. That was the healing journey for me, like you said, was to go deep and to find out, you know, there's a big difference, and I say this a lot, that there's a big difference between change and transformation. Change is usually based upon something that you do. In order to have change, you have to do something different. And change is also a temporary state. Just like water changes into ice cubes and changes into a gaseous state, it can always change back. If the outer circumstances and the environment has a shift in it, it will change back. It could always revert back to what it was. But transformation is something that is irreversible. The butterfly cannot go back to being a caterpillar. No matter how much it may even want to be, it cannot go back. You know, once it has touched the sky, it must live there. And so transformation requires you, where change requires you to do something different, transformation requires you to become someone different. And so this journey of mine was about becoming someone different. And I had to look at the person who I was being, which was, what was the emotions that I was predominantly holding? What were the belief systems that I was predominantly holding for myself? What was I thinking about me and about the world predominantly? And how do I change those? You know, how do I change those? So I teach this very, you know, for all the people that are listening who are dealing with some kind of illness or disease, especially chronic disease, that all disease is it's a manifestation of a belief system that you've held for a very long time, a feeling that you've held for a very long time. And the first step in healing is to get very aware of what that is. And so how do you do that? And this is kind of what I did. This is the first thing that I began to do, which I shared a little bit earlier, but I really asked myself, how does this disease, how does this experience right now make me feel? Not make me feel physically, because yeah, there was pain and all that, but how do I emotionally feel with this? Well, I felt ashamed. I felt a failure. And I felt hopeless. And so I had to look at where was I feeling like that in my life before now. And shame, I had been feeling shame for a very long time because I'm gay. And before this healing journey, this is part of my healing process, I had a lot of shame around that. I grew up in a culture. I grew up in a location. I grew up in an environment that said gay is not okay, that there's something wrong with gay. And so I knew I was gay when I was 5 years old, and I remember quite clearly at that time when I was five and I realized that I was gay. I was just dating this girl in kindergarten, and she broke up with me to get with this other guy. And the very night I found this out, I was upset. I was mad at her. But I wasn't really upset that she had broken up with me. I was upset that she was getting with this guy because I thought he was cute. And I realized that. And in the same time I thought about that, I realized that was not okay. That was not something that was okay. That was not normal. That was not something that my family was going to find okay, or that my environment or my school or, you know, I had already heard messages already that was not something that people found okay. So I began to pray for that to change every night of my life until I was 21 years old. So I was in this process. I had held deeply in subconscious, even though I thought I was working through that, deeply in my subconscious, I had shame about who I was. And shame is an emotion that the body actually does not know how to experience. It doesn't know how to really deal with. There are different emotions in the body. This is kind of something that I learned. There are different emotions that we experience that the body was created to handle through the evolution of human beings. You know, we were equipped to handle fear because fear let us know sometimes that we needed to move from a situation. Now, we weren't supposed to stay in fear. But initially, fear could be a signal that you needed to move away. You know, there was a creature, there was a tiger over there or something, and that we needed to move over here because they were hungry. Frustration and things like that, you know, helped us build tools and things. We moved through those emotions so our bodies could handle that a little better. But shame was an emotion that was not an emotion that the human body was designed and created to experience initially. And so usually when somebody is feeling shame and they're in an experience of shame, they cannot hold that for a very long time without manifesting some disease. Because all disease is an outer representation of the inner feelings that you have. They're telling you you're imbalanced. You're out of balance pretty much. So I had shame around that. I had the failure for feeling that I was not living the life that I thought. You know, I was supposed to be this famous singer. I was supposed to be, you know, grand and great. And because I had this feeling of how life should look for me, quote unquote, and I was not in that look, I felt like I had failed. And so I was holding that feeling of failure. And then also the hopelessness, not just from the illness, but from the hopelessness of having a dream and not living it, trying to go after it and it's not happening yet. I thought, here I was, young, you know, looking back, you know, many of us can identify. We think we just know everything at our early 20s.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, you know, and I came out of college thinking, as soon as I graduate, I'm going to land a big record deal with a big record label and be a famous singer. And that was going to happen immediately. And I just knew my life was going to happen just that way. And so because it did not happen that way, I felt like, and I was trying to make it happen right now, right now, right now, right now, I felt hopeless. So there was these emotions that I was feeling that were out of alignment with the truth of who we really are, which is abundant, which is absolutely worthy and beautiful, and all of that. And so I was out of alignment with the truth of who I was, and you cannot be out of alignment for too long of a time without it showing itself in your body in some way.
Right, because all of our organs, everything in the physical body is a set of its own operating frequencies. So like you said, shame, guilt is often creates cancers,
yeah.
Guilt in the body. And so it's probably the first time maybe people are introduced to that who are listening. But yes, over a period of time, when you lower the, just gradually are lowering the frequency of your liver, this, you know, you'll get disease because it can no longer operate or function, you know, optimally anymore. And so shame's one of those, guilt's another one too.
Yeah, and it's, you know, something to really understand is that your body is literally your friend, but it does not have any creative force. You know, A Course in Miracles tells us that the body by itself does not have any creative force. It is only responding to your mind. And so the thoughts that you're thinking create the feelings that you have, which is the vibrational frequency that the law of attraction is responding to, which is building your reality around. So your body is your best friend because it's literally telling you, hey, this is what's going on. We need to take a look at this. You know, hey, any illness or disease is a signal from your body to say you are literally out of balance with your thoughts and your feelings, and you need to recenter and rebalance yourself. And so, again, when you find out, you know, how are you dominantly feeling? You know, again, I was feeling failure, shame, hopelessness. The answer to my healing began with, how do I feel the opposite of that? So how do I feel, you know, the opposite of shame is appreciation and love. So how do I feel that for myself? How the opposite of hopelessness is absolute faith and trust. So how do I feel that? And, you know, the opposite of failure is, again, success and accomplishment. So how do I feel that in my life? So my journey was beginning to have those feelings. And that was the 7-year journey for me. It was a 7-year trek. Not because it takes that long to get those feelings, but because I'm stubborn.
And like we all are.
Like we all are. And some days I listen more than others. You know, there was a journey that I had to go through. But I honor my journey because I wouldn't change it for anything. Because through those 7 years, I really, really, really began to know really what healing is about, what life is about, and how to really transform yourself into the bliss, the happiness, the success, and the self-love that you're here for, that all of us are here for. It took me 7 years, but it doesn't have to take anybody else that long. You know, I've seen it happen in months. I've seen it happen in weeks for people. But the truth is you have to allow yourself the time that it's going to take for who you are. And it was 7 years for me, and I own that, and I'm grateful for that. It wasn't necessary, but it was definitely meaningful. It was definitely meaningful. So, yeah, that was my healing journey. Yeah, you know, I did the whole, I was vegan for a while, and then I couldn't, you know, I changed to just eating clean and eating organic. There was exercise involved. There was appreciation involved. You know, I had appreciation journals that I wrote in. There were a lot of things that I did, but everything that I was doing, every action that I took, you know, whether it was a vision board or meditation or whatever, every single thing that I did was in alignment with, was in direct purpose for helping me raise my vibration, helping me get in alignment with the feelings that were the opposite of shame, failure, and hopelessness. So everything I did, if I was doing appreciation, it was to get me out of shame and into self-love and appreciation. If I was eating well and exercising, it was to get me to feeling better about my body and how I was treating it so that I felt more self-love for myself. So every single action that I was doing was about raising my feeling, how I felt. And more my feelings began to raise up, the better and better my body began to respond.
And that is so true. I know we always say it's so cliche. We hear these cliches all the time. You know, you can't love somebody else till you love yourself. You know, we hear all these things. But it really is about how we feel deep down inside about ourselves. And I truly believe, like, the journey that you've been, that other people are on, and I really like how you own the 7 years. Everybody's different. You know, I see people experiencing things that I've already been through. They think I'm incredibly patient with them, my friends, and it's like, who am I to determine how long it is for you to go through this particular phase of the of your journey? But you're right. Everything, you know, we can do all kinds of surface things, and, you know, our stubbornness, I learned along the way too, was that for me, because I, you know, a lot of people are always like, we need to get the ego out of there and all of that. You know, something I learned, which you may have learned as well, is that the ego is actually quite useful. It just has to be flexible. It likes
Absolutely.
To be in control, but the control is an illusion. So if you work past that. And so that was one of the keys to my own journey, was to obviously really align, like you said, with the opposite of those feelings that had created that illness for you. And to really love yourself deeply, to express from that kind of a space for yourself.
You know, I want to just champion what you just said and kind of piggyback on that, because it's so important. With a lot of the conversation we hear today, I've started to demonize the ego, but
mm-hmm.
the ego is a part of you. It's a part of your human experience here. And since it's a part of you, and what you just said, self-love is the most powerful force in the universe. If you don't learn how to love it unconditionally, you are not in alignment, and you'll never be. It's a part of you. And again, you have to learn when it needs to speak and when it kind of needs to be quiet. But I really champion you for that, because I think the next place of our evolution as human beings, especially in this pathway of consciousness, is to understand that the ego is not our enemy.
Well, and that's something that, you know, I had to learn along the way, kind of stumbling and kicking and screaming, which I'm sure you can relate to.
Yeah.
Because everyone's always like, ego's bad. But anything like that, and I'm sure you agree, is that any self-rejection cannot be.
Yes.
Whether it be our body, because maybe it's a little heavier than we'd like. Our eyes are too close together, you know, just something very, you know, physically oriented like that, or my ego this or my ego that. We really cannot, and I'm sure that that's part of the angel message too, is, you know, we can't self-hate, you know, self-judge, have all of these experiences going on rapidly every day and expect transformation to occur.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
And so therein lies, we've got to do the work, right? That's part of
Absolutely.
Our work.
Absolutely.
Well, I can't
That's
believe
hard.
It, but we are actually down to 3 minutes. And I've been watching the chat room, and everybody has just really enjoyed you being on the show. Can you share some of the things, you know, that you've got going on, how people can reach out to you? I'm sure you've already inspired countless people who are going to listen to even the archive who aren't listening live. So,
yeah, my work today, I'm a spiritual life coach, inspirational speaker, and I also mentor entrepreneurs to build their businesses for success. So my whole work basically is founded in teaching people how to thrive in their personal life, in their spirit, in their relationships, and in their business. And I do that by teaching them how to connect with the wisdom of their souls, how to really understand spiritual principle and apply universal law so that they raise their consciousness and totally transform their lives to a life of bliss, happiness, joy, and success. And people can connect with me. My website is jeromebraggs.com. That's JeromeBraggs.com. As well as my Facebook. You know, right now, my website that you'll see right now is changing. I'm putting out a new website at the end of this year, so a lot of that information will not be the same. So if you really want to know exactly what I'm doing and how I'm doing it and what I'm putting out there, join me on Facebook. My Facebook is facebook.com/coach Jerome Braggs. Coach, that's C-O-A-C-H, Jerome Braggs. So if you connect me there, like my page, you'll hear all the great stuff that's happening, and you'll be able to connect and engage with me.
Well, thank you so much, Jerome. That's all the time we have this evening, guys. I hope you enjoyed Jerome coming on the show. I know I have. You've been listening to the Angel Connection Show with CJ, as you do on Fridays. Be sure to tune into next week's show where we have an in-depth discussion very similar and kind of coincides here, the energy and power of belief with my special guest, Mary Seiss. Until then, my friends, remember to be angelic to yourself so that you can become an angel to others. Take care and have an amazing week, guys. Love you. See you next week.